This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Sevilla Mann. Coming up, Gordon Evans talks with Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman about why Battle Creek City Commission elections could move to even-numbered years, and the fate of an ordinance to allow livestock in some parts of the city. But first, in some ways, it's been a troubled year for bicycling in Kalamazoo. In June 2016, an allegedly drugged driver killed five cyclists and seriously injured four others as they rode in Cooper Township. But there's also been progress, including new safe passing laws in two cities and a township. We're going to talk about where things stand for cyclists in Kalamazoo with Paul Selden and Paul Wells of the Kalamazoo Bicycle Club. Wells is the KBC's education chair, Selden is the club's road safety director, and the founder of Bike Friendly Kalamazoo. Bike Week gets underway in Kalamazoo this Saturday with a number of group rides and a film festival. Paul Selden and Paul Wells, welcome to West Southwest.
Thanks, Sevilla.
Yeah, thank you, Sevilla, for having us.
Has Kalamazoo had a good year when it comes to progress toward a bike-friendlier environment?
I'm going to say definitely. And there are a lot of reasons for that that were in the making even before the tragedy last year of June 7th, in which nine bicyclists were the victim of a driver who couldn't keep his car where it should be on the road. So some of these things were in the works, but they were given an impetus, I think. And the good people, the leadership and stakeholders in Kalamazoo who were working on things like complete streets policies, ordinances to give 5-foot passing to bicyclists, better infrastructure that would provide better trails, better on-road cycling facilities for bicyclists. These were all in the works, but they really did get an impetus because I think people realized the sooner the better.
I agree.
This is Paul Wells now.
The atmosphere currently, to me, is amazingly positive in local government, the cities of Kalamazoo and Portage and Oshtemo and other townships as well. There's an enlightenment and a positive attitude that hasn't been there, and I credit Paul and his work with that, the Kalamazoo Bike Club and their work. There was a trend prior to the tragedy of local support for bike riding, local support for bike infrastructure, local support for improving bicycle safety and bicycle acceptance. That bicycle, I mean, the laws in the state of Michigan make bicycle use on the road perfectly legal. It's very clear. And if that, you know, if we accept that as the case, that bicycles are legal road users, then the obvious way forward from there is to educate the public. Bike riders and motorists and law enforcement, to educate everyone that bicycles are legal road users and they need to be treated with respect and bicycle riders need to ride in a safe manner.
Well, let's talk about safe passing distance laws and ordinances. Who wants to jump in on that?
I'll mention something, Paul Selden here. I think the attention surrounding the recently enacted 5-foot passing laws that have been put into with the force of law in the city of Kalamazoo, the city of Portage, and now Oshtemo Township have, and the discussion around that, the healthy discussion, the pros and the cons, and the how to safely drive around bicyclists have all been helpful, I believe, from the bicyclist perspective in particular, because now I am noticing many more drivers giving us what I would call a courteous and safer amount of room. Now, not every driver, not every bicyclist has experienced this on every ride, but I would say by and large, I feel like there's a more common courtesy that's being extended. And when I say common courtesy, as a bicyclist, I try to wave when I can safely, because after all, I've got to keep hands on the handlebars. Or even if it's just a little wave, a flick of the wrist while I'm holding the handlebar, to acknowledge those drivers who are giving me a safer amount of road room.
And Paul Wells, do you want to just explain too exactly what these laws require?
The 5-foot passing laws that Kalamazoo and Portage passed last fall utilize the same wording. And basically what it says is that any motor vehicle passing a bike, a bicyclist riding in the road, has to give them 5 feet of clearance. And they have to pass when it is safe to do so. And added to that law is also a clause that says it's okay to cross a yellow line to pass a bicyclist if it is safe to do so. According to motor vehicle code, no one can cross a yellow line when they pass. So it makes it okay to cross that yellow line when they pass if it is safe to do so. So it's at the discretion of the motorist.
Many motorists were giving bicyclists more and more room over the years. As I recall, in the past 5 or 7 years, the environment has gotten better. Motorists were doing this on their own to a certain extent anyway. But now, I firmly believe it's made a positive difference in the number of motorists who are giving bicyclists safe passing room.
99% of motorists that pass me when I ride my bike give me at least 5 feet. And typically, I think if I could hold a tape measure out there whenever someone passes me, it's probably 6 to 8 feet. And I use a rearview mirror, and I keep track of the traffic behind me.
As a cyclist, you're wearing
a
rearview mirror.
Yes, as a cyclist, I always use a rearview mirror. And if I see that a car is going to come or a vehicle is going to come what I think is too close, I will move slightly to the left, still within the bike lane or in the lane of traffic, slightly to the left and create a little more space. And as they approach, I can move over.
Slightly to the left or slightly to the right?
Slightly to the left, which puts me more in their vision and a little bit more in the way and makes them aware of me. If they're on a cell phone or oblivious to the fact that there's a bicyclist that they're approaching, I want them to be aware of it. And sometimes I will hold my hand out briefly to get their attention, and I can create some space that way.
Here's a practical question. If you're a driver and you're approaching a cyclist, how do you get a handle on what 5 feet is?
Paul Wells recently did a photographic essay, I think, with MLive that was very successful that graphically showed this. Paul, what do you think?
When we were taking photos of our minivan, my wife was in the minivan and I was on my bicycle and I had a friend take photos of us, and I measured 5 feet. In that situation with a motor vehicle particularly moving at a significant rate of speed, passing 5 feet is not a big distance. And 3 feet feels like a near miss. 3 feet, a lot of states have a 3-foot passing law.
And Kalamazoo considered passing a 3-foot passing law instead of a 5-foot passing law.
Kalamazoo did consider that, and a bunch of us from the bike club went to the city council meeting and lobbied them for a 5-foot passing law. We asked them to amend their proposal or their potential ordinance from 3 feet to 5 feet, and they did indeed do that, and we're very grateful for that. To enforce an exact 5-foot passing law is a difficult thing to do for a couple of reasons. It's hard to measure, and it's not often that a police officer in a vehicle is going to be in a situation where they see a motorist, directly behind a motorist, and they see a motorist pass a bicycle. And how do they know how many feet that pass was? Well, they really don't. There apparently is a digital optical measuring device that can be put in a police vehicle that can measure that distance. And it would be great if all police vehicles had that, but I don't think that's going to be a thing that we're going to see in the near future. But what the 5-foot passing law does is it educates motorists and bike riders that there needs to be a safe passing distance. And it just makes a point that you need to be safe when you're out there, and to try to squeeze by a bike rider when there's oncoming traffic is not a safe thing to do.
Most adult males, I've read this, I'm not trying to overgeneralize, have an arm span fingertip to fingertip of about 6 feet, which is where the old fathom reading in sailing comes from. As they're pulling up a line, it's easy to grab 6 feet at a time. And so 6 feet, well, that's about that far. 5 feet is a little greater than the distance between a curb and the edge of a typical 4-foot bike lane, the white line. So all you're doing is giving a little more room. And I think Paul is right when he says it's not the notion of the exact amount that's so particular or important right now. Right now, what's important is if you get hit by a vehicle, you know that that law has been violated, and it gives the law enforcement agencies a little extra something on the basis to go forward with a prosecution.
Are there going to be signs letting road users know about this 5-foot passing law?
Yes. The city of Portage has already erected a number of signs. They've attached them to the posts. On the major roads coming into Portage, the city limits signposts. So there is a large 5-foot passing ordinance sign coming into the city of Portage. They've already been put up. The Kalamazoo Traffic Board just passed a resolution that they will also erect signs. I don't know at this point, I don't know where they will be or how many there will be, but they also will have signs coming into the city of Kalamazoo explaining that there is a 5-foot bicycle passing law.
Paul Selden?
People can sometimes say, well, we need fewer signs rather than more. But the presence of a sign at a city limit reminding people who may, after all, be from out of town, maybe coming here from another city because they're a college student, they don't live here, but they're living here temporarily. People who have just recently moved into the area, or people who just aren't familiar with the law, and there are people who still don't, I'll just use the proverbial phrase, read a newspaper or listen to a radio. There are people whose only exposure to the fact that there is now a law requiring drivers to give 5 feet of passing room to bicyclists will be the when they first view that sign.
We've been talking about making roads safer for bicyclists. Are there times when it is more appropriate to build a separate way for cyclists, something that's not on the road? I ask this because I hear people make this argument at local government meetings whenever bike-related issues come up. Tell me your thoughts.
I love to ride on multi-use trails at a certain time when it's a nice day out and I want to take my time and I want to enjoy the scenery and maybe ride right next to a creek or count the mileage markers off as I'm going up a long hill, let's say climbing towards South Haven on the Calhaven Trail or the Kalamazoo River Valley Trail, or when I'm going through that beautiful scenery as I'm headed north on the Kalamazoo River Valley Trail extension that takes everybody towards D Avenue. I love that feeling of nature that it gives me. But what I don't like is to encounter people on rollerblades with dogs on long leashes or no leash at all. When I'm trying to get someplace in a hurry, let's say I'm going to an appointment or trying to exercise for fitness, that's when I like to use the road. So it's very situational. So when people speak at a public meeting and say, I would never, and then fill in the blanks, go on a sidewalk, go on a road, go on a multi-use path, go on, I don't know, like I say, fill in the blanks. They're really speaking for themselves, but they're not speaking for every type of bicyclist. And we have to recognize, as the national safety agencies do, that bicyclists come in all stripes. They're a very diverse group, and they ride for different reasons at different speeds. And so that's why even right next to an off-the-road, what appears to be a sidewalk or what appears to be a multi-use trail, you'll still see bicyclists in the road because, by and large, it's safer if you know what you're doing and you're comfortable doing it.
Paul Wells here. Bicycles are more predictable and visible when they're riding in the road, whether there's a bike lane or not a bike lane. Statistically, bike riders on the sidewalk or on a bike trail or a recreational trail adjacent to the road that crosses intersections are many, many times more vulnerable, more likely to have an accident. The statistics shows this because they're not visible and they're not as predictable. Bike lanes in the road tend to be far safer. They're also less expensive. Building a protected bike lane or an adjacent path is much, much more expensive and potentially less safe. Protected bike lanes are great if they're properly constructed.
This would be a bike lane with some kind of barrier between the
bike lane with a barrier can be a wonderful thing on a really busy road. If you were dealing with West Michigan in downtown Kalamazoo, I know they did a demonstration protected bike lane there. But bike lanes properly designed can be very inexpensive and can be safer than an adjacent path. And I'd also add a comment to what Paul Selden said a moment ago regarding bike trails. There's all kinds of bike riders. Bike trails are wonderful. I'm 100% in favor of them for recreational riding. Generally, though, they don't go to a destination. They're there for recreational bike use and other use, walking and rollerblading, Paul mentioned. But they don't go somewhere. They're not transportational. Roads are transportational, and bike riders that are trying to get to a destination need to be able to use the road, and they need to have an infrastructure that allows them to be safe doing that.
I have a feeling that some drivers, when they drive, let's say stupidly, around a bicycle, they may not always be acting out of their own sense of impatience, but out of that pressure that's building up in their head of, somebody's going to honk at me behind me, someone's going to get mad at me because I'm making room for this bicycle but not going with the car speed of traffic. So I don't know if that ever happens to you as drivers, but what do you say to that person who's getting a little white knuckle as they say, I don't want to be unsafer on this bike, but I also don't want someone to honk at me?
I'd say relax to start with, because it will help lower your blood pressure. You'll live longer if you're not carrying a lot of anger or road rage around for whatever the reason, whether it's feeling like someone's honking behind you to get you to go faster, or whether you yourself are someone who wants to strangle a slow-moving vehicle, whether it be a mail carrier or a farm vehicle, or whether you're bothered because now there's construction in the road and there the road workers telling you to slow down. I would say chill. You'll live longer. You'll be happier. Yeah. Relax a little bit.
Paul Wells here. I think it's good for all of us who operate motor vehicles to remind ourselves every day when we get behind the wheel that at that moment we're doing the most dangerous activity that we do every day.
Paul Selden and Paul Wells, thank you both so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure, Sevilla. Paul Selden, appreciating everything that WMUK does to help educate the public and raise awareness.
Yeah, thank you, Sevilla. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and to be able to talk about bike riding in Kalamazoo.
Paul Selden is the Road Safety Director for the Kalamazoo Bicycle Club and the founder of Bike Friendly Kalamazoo. Paul Wells is the club's Education Chair. Kalamazoo Bike Week starts on Saturday. There's a link to the schedule on our website. This is West Southwest. I'm Sevilla Mann.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. This November, Battle Creek voters will elect 9 city commissioners, but those elected this year might serve a 3-year instead of a 2-year term. While Battle Creek, like Kalamazoo and Portage, currently holds city elections in odd-numbered years, a vote could be taken next week on moving the elections for Battle Creek City Commission to even-numbered years. Battle Creek Inquirer government reporter Jennifer Bowman has been covering this story and joins us via Skype. Thanks for being with us, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Give us the basic argument that someone would make or has been making for moving Battle Creek City Commission elections to even-numbered years.
It boils down to 2 arguments anytime you see this proposal come up. There's the chance that it could increase voter turnout because it would be in state elections and presidential elections, and it could save money without having to run in those odd years in election. So the city of Battle Creek says you could save anywhere from $25,000 to $30,000 in election, because that's about how much it costs to have a city commission election on its own. And right now our voter turnout rate is about 8 to 9%. It's been in the high single digits.
And are there concerns about moving city elections, and if there would be some downsides to it?
Yeah, some of the concerns that came out in the workshop when they discussed this the first time was when you are in an even year, you are running against all the other elections. So there was the concern that perhaps there wouldn't be a focus on the city commission elections, or a concern that maybe they wouldn't even get to the bottom of the ballot to fill out their picks for city commission. And then something that was raised by Commissioner Andy Hembold at the meeting was a concern that maybe because you're going to be up against presidential and state elections, that even though the city commission is nonpartisan, perhaps there might be this consideration of partisanship if the city commission elections were to happen on even years.
So I mentioned at the beginning that if you win in November this year for a Battle Creek City Commission seat, and assuming this change goes ahead, then we're talking about a 3-year term. Is that how the transition then would basically work?
Yeah, they're looking at, so if you're elected in November of this year, you would serve a 3-year term. Now, if they wanted to do any other changes, they would have to open up the city charter, and I'm not sure if there's a willingness to do that. But the plan would be to do the 3-year term to get you on the even year, and then without a city charter change, it would go back to 2-year terms.
You just mentioned that there about the city charter. Is there any talk there, other commissioners are talking about anything else that they want to do via city elections at the moment?
Certainly, Battle Creek has always mulled the idea of directly electing its mayor. Right now, the commission elects among itself a mayor and a vice mayor, and that's done annually, despite city commissioners being elected every 2 years. There are also talks about maybe looking at wards and at-large seats and maybe doing staggered terms. But this was all kind of put, thrown out there in the discussion of changing to even-year elections. And when it was brought up by the city attorney that these things would require a city charter change, there didn't seem to be much of a unanimous thought process on that. I think a lot of people recognize that that would require a lot more work, and they'd be getting into a lot more than just the simple discussion they were there for that day for even year elections.
Is there a desire to make this change, if it's going to be made, with some advance notice so that someone who wants to run for Battle Creek City Commission this year understands that they would be running for a 3-year term, at least this time around?
Yeah, they were really mindful of that. They wanted to be pretty mindful of when this public hearing and when this vote would be and when petition packets were available. And those can be picked up June 5th. And what they're hoping, there's discussion about maybe a handout when someone pulls a packet to have them understand that this is a unique year if this passes. And city commissioners have been pretty vocal about letting folks know that this will be on the city commission agenda, that this is something that's being considered. And they certainly don't want there to be any misconceptions about why there's going to be a 3-year term. They want to be as transparent with it as possible. That's certainly the message they were trying to communicate at their workshop.
And it's on the agenda for Tuesday?
It is. You'll see a public hearing and the resolution. At both times, the public can comment their thoughts on that, and they also have general public comments. So what they're hoping is to hear from residents, they say, on the issue.
Right now, is there a strong sense of how the commission breaks down here? Does it seem like this has broad support?
It seems so. A lot of them were pretty convinced with just the cost savings. You know, Mayor Dave Walter said at the workshop that one of their biggest responsibilities is being mindful of tax dollars and the budget. And the fact that if there is an even year election, there could be better coordination among the city clerk's office and the county clerk's office for elections, and that, you know, you could save $25,000 to $30,000. To some of them, they said just it seemed like a no-brainer. Of course, there were the concerns raised about partisanship, about maybe a decreased focus on the city commission race, but there didn't seem to be strong opposition to this change either.
Well, let me ask you about another story which recently came up for the Battle Creek City Commission. The commissioner's deadlocked on an ordinance regarding livestock in the city. If this had passed, or if it were to pass at some point in the future, what exactly would it do?
So the proposal had been discussed for more than a year now. There have been discussions on whether to allow urban livestock. And the discussion has always been around hens, goats, bees, and rabbits. And so they would base how many animals you could have. It's based on your property size, from anywhere from as small as 50,000 square feet to more than an acre, and they used animal units. There were setback requirements, shelter requirements, but essentially what this would do is allow urban farming in residential neighborhoods in places that were not zoned for agriculture. And it tended to be backed by those who wanted to see an opportunity to raise their own, food, know more about the food process. And they also claimed that there would be economic benefits to the city with this. And opponents, of course, were pretty vocal about their concerns about animal controls capabilities, the potential for increased abuse of animals. And ultimately, it failed last week.
But it was a 4-4 vote. It actually tied. And you told us in your story that this doesn't necessarily guarantee that the issue is going to go away, because some commissioners did signal a desire to revisit the proposal. So what could happen next?
Well, there was the desire from some commissioners that, you know, Commissioner Mark Banky, for example, said he'd like to see some kind of compromise to see this happen, since so many people had come out, whether they were for it or against it. What exactly they'd be interested in seeing in the ordinance, however, was not as clear. Those who were for it were certainly for it, and those who were against it had, said that they heard from many residents who didn't want it. They did a lot of research over the past year, looking into other ordinances, the animal units, use of it. So it remains unclear what exactly could be put in that ordinance to sway any of the elected officials' minds. But just because an ordinance hasn't been, it was unsuccessful in being introduced, does not prevent it from it being proposed again. And, we're also very close to potentially a different set of commissioners come November. So I think it would always depend on kind of the temperament and the desire of who's sitting in that seat.
Jennifer Bowman, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Jennifer Bowman is the Battle Creek Inquirer's government reporter. She joined us via Skype. Links to her stories on the Battle Creek City Commission can be found at battlecreekinquirer.com and through links at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.